The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right!
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
Oh, and first pitch, rushing!
Deep left field! This is what it is! Welcome off!
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, and Chris.
How might we project Julio Rodriguez next season? Let's find out. Welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today on Thursday, September 15th. Frank Stanfield joined by Scott White. And today on the show, we've got some fill in the blank, how to handle struggling Rockies. They've got 7 home games next week. I just don't know if we want to play them. There's just some really bad hitters in their lineup right now. We'll get to those. And I do have an angry email for Scott White.
Are they angry with me?
Oh, they are angry with you. Are you? Are you ready to defend yourself, Scotty?
Probably not, but that's fine.
All right. Anyway, let's jump in.
Oh my goodness gracious!
Oh my goodness gracious, Scott! A standout from Wednesday. Where would you like to begin?
I'd like to begin with old Chuck.
He stinks, Charlie Morton. Chuck. We were talking beforehand, Scott. It's just. He is so frustrating, but go ahead.
Well, here's the thing. I think we've overlooked an aspect of Charlie Morton's season that's coming home to roost right now, because I know me certainly, but I would say all of us, everybody who analyzes fantasy baseball for a living tends to focus on whiffs. I mean, that's the most important thing a pitcher can do is get strikeouts, and a good indicator of how good a pitcher is at getting strikeouts is how many swings and misses he gets. And Charlie Morton's still done that at a terrific rate this year. And for a while, it looked like he was recovering from that slow start to the season, just like he did last year. It looked like he was following the same script. His K per nine is actually a little higher than last year. He's got 10.7. And the xFIP 356 versus 331 last year. But here's what's changed for Charlie Morton. Fewer ground balls. Like, he has been, it's been kind of he used to be a ridiculous ground ball pitcher back when he was more of a sinker baller with the Pirates, and then obviously had that career transformation with the Astros, became more of a fastball curveball guy and more of a bat misser and a better asset overall, but was still a good ground ball pitcher just by virtue of his curveball. It generated a lot of ground balls, and that helped him keep the ball in the park. Well, his ground ball rate this year is a career low 40%, and he's allowed 24 home runs. He didn't allow one in this start. That wasn't the problem here at the Giants, but now 4 earned runs or more in 4 of his last 7 starts. And his 24 home runs allowed this year, Charlie Morton's, are a career high by 6. 6. So, in a year where home runs are going down, where pitchers are less vulnerable to them overall, Charlie Morton has been more vulnerable to them than ever. And I think that pretty much explains it. Because, like, that's going to impact ERA in a way nothing else can. And he's zigging while everyone zags in the worst possible way. And I don't know what it means for his prospects next year. I think he's talked about retiring before. There's a chance we don't see him next year. But if we do, it's going to be a tough player to analyze. Because, yes, it's out of character for him to allow this many fly balls and by virtue of that, this many home runs. But, you know, can't be sure how likely he is to bounce back either.
Yeah, it's been a weird season for Charlie Morton. Obviously, coming back from the broken leg in the World Series last year, maybe that contributed to the slow start to the season, but he's just been really inconsistent. He went through that stretch, like you said, Scott, where we thought he was back, and you know he pitched very well during that. It was probably like an 8-10 start stretch, something like that. But now, again, it's, you know, he's allowed exactly 4 earned runs in 3 of his last 4 starts. He's got a 5.29 ERA during that span. He's given up a lot of hard contact over those last 4 starts. The home runs, you're absolutely right. Even if you look at home runs per 9, 1.37 is his highest since 2010. And that's, you know, back when he was a completely different pitcher with the Pittsburgh Pirates. So I don't know.
A really bad pitcher. That was the worst year of his career.
Yeah. I don't know that there's anything we could have done to see this coming. It seems just kind of fluky when a pitcher's ground ball rate just dips that much. I remember Aaron Nola, this happened with him last year, where his ground ball rate out of nowhere, career low, giving up more fly balls as a result, just more home runs went out of the park. And I just don't really know that there's anything we could have done to project it or see it coming. It's just kind of one of those
either
fluky things.
It's either a fluke or it's a skill change. And those are things you can't predict. So I'm not going to beat myself up over that. But in terms of what it means for rest of this season, I think I don't think he should drop Charlie Morton. He's still, you know, he's got 187 strikeouts this year, and has a great supporting cast. But I think we do treat him as more of a matchups play down the stretch. And I know in a couple of my shallower leagues, I've been sitting him more than I've been starting him lately.
Last point on Charlie Morton, the walks are up this year as well. 3.2 walks per 9. So you couple that with the home runs and obviously just bad things are going to happen then. He looks like he's in line for 2 starts. I guess we'll find out for sure tomorrow, Scott, once you go through the schedules and we project next week. But if he does face the Nationals and at the Phillies, like CBS says he will, would you start him in that 2-star week?
Yeah, probably. Certainly in points leagues. In Roto, you might weigh how much you need ERA and WHIP versus how much you need wins and strikeouts. But probably start Morton for that 2-start week, and then maybe not again. Well, looks like after the Nationals and Phillies next week, looks like the next start would be against the Mets, and then he may get one more against the Marlins during that extra long scoring period. So the final scoring period of the season will be a week and a half. So almost every pitcher will have 2 starts, which will be interesting. But if one of Morton's is against the Marlins, you may have to think about it then too. So maybe you do end up starting in the next 2 weeks for all my talk of him being a matchups play.
Oh my goodness gracious for me. I wanted to choose an obscure hitter and there was no shortage of those here on Wednesday, but Mark Mathias. I brought him up yesterday. I think we just kind of glossed over him. He followed up a double dong from Tuesday with a sock and a shoe on Wednesday. His 6th home run, his 3rd steal, and he's now started, I believe it's 3 straight games, and he wasn't playing before that. But he is now getting some run on a team that likes to run in Texas, and he had an interesting season in the minors. He's a journeyman type. He's 28 years old, but in 58 games down in the minors, he hit .322, 9 homers, 13 steals, a .940 OPS. He's only 1% rostered. He has second base and outfield eligibility. He's got 6 games next week. Obviously, this isn't, you know, a standard league, a 3 outfielder league kind of play, but Scott, in deeper leagues, 5 outfielder leagues, it's kind of hard to overlook what this guy has done the past 2 days.
Well, who was he starting against today? It was J.P. Sears, right? A left-hander. Yeah. So the Rangers have faced 4 straight left-handers. He basically just starts against left-handers. And so Yeah, I'm willing to overlook it.
Ah. All right. Well, I tried to go with an obscure hitter, but it's just like two massive games in a row. But yeah, perhaps that is why he wasn't playing before. But you know what? This might have earned him more playing time, though. You know, putting together two games like this. But we'll see how the weekend goes for him. If he continues to play, then maybe he's someone we're adding over the weekend. Again, in those deeper five outfielder leagues, it's, you know, outfield has been terrible. So I know some people are probably desperate in those formats.
Looks like only one left-hander on the schedule for the Rangers next week. So if you know, he starts sitting once the righties come back, then we can probably ignore Mathias.
Okay. I did have a few other deep league outfielders kind of in that same range. Seth Brown, he's only 35% rostered. He went 1-for-4 with his 22nd home run. He has 6 home games next week in the launching pad known as Oakland Coliseum. However, it looks like he is set to face Robbie Ray, Luis Castillo, George Kirby, and Jacob DeGrom. So I don't know how excited I am to play Seth Brown. And Will Myers, quietly playing well. He went 3-for-4 with a double and a run scored. He has started 7 straight games for the Padres. And in 32 games since returning, he's hitting .290 with 3 homers, 8 doubles, hitting the ball hard, 91 mile per hour average exit velocity. He's 17% rostered. 6 games next week, 3 of those in Coors Field. So, Scott, can I interest you in Will Myers or Seth Brown for next week?
I mean, it depends how deep the league is. You know, I look out there and I see Joey Meneses is still 52% rostered. I see Gunnar Henderson is still 69% rostered. I see Oscar Gonzalez is still 44% rostered. He just homered again. Oscar Gonzalez now in his past 10 games batting .410 with 4 homers, 4 doubles. If any of those guys are available, then obviously you're not thinking about Will Myers. I imagine I'll come up with 10 sleeper hitters for next week that doesn't include Myers. But if you're talking about a deeper scenario than that, if he's got a series at Coors Field and is playing regularly enough, then sure, it's possible he could factor.
Okay. And Seth Brown, probably not with those matchups, right?
Yeah, probably not.
Okay. And they're both ahead of Mark Mathias, I would imagine.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I just don't think the playing time is going to be there for Mathias. But as you point out, if that changes, then so does the math on that thinking.
Let's talk about Gunnar Henderson, because I was surprised to see that he was only 69% rostered, as you mentioned. He went 2-for-4 with a double and a triple, actually turned into a little league home run because there was an error in left field. But he added 4 RBI. He's batting .320 with an .890 OPS early on here. And he's got 7 games next week, 3 lefties on the schedule. Now, it looks like Gunnar Henderson only has 6 at-bats against left-handed pitching so far. I know he's mostly played every day, but I just kind of wonder. I just kind of wonder if he's going to start all 3 against left-handed pitching. So it's just something in the back of my mind, Scott. Do you think Gunnar Henderson should be universally rostered more than just 69%?
So the Orioles have faced 2 left-handers since he got called up. He started against the first. He sat against the second one. That was Sunday. That was the only game the only time he hasn't been in the lineup. Would I sit him? I think if I was already inclined to start him, I wouldn't be scared away by the 3 left-handers on the schedule. He may sit 1 or 2 of those games. It's a 7-game week overall for the Orioles, so I don't think that's a deal breaker if you need the production of somebody like Henderson. And if it's a standard head-to-head lineup, they're you know, you probably have short, third, second base covered without Henderson, and he's, you know, more somebody you're considering for your utility spot. Okay, maybe you sit him in that scenario. But if it's, again, if it's something where you've had a problem at one of the positions where Henderson's available and he looks like the miracle solution for you, then yeah, I would say go ahead and start him.
The 2 most added third basemen on CBS right now are Eduardo Escobar and Josh Jung. Would you take Gunnar Henderson over both of those?
I would.
I agree. Oscar Gonzalez, you already got to him, Scott. We mentioned him yesterday. He's extremely hot right now. His 9th home run, he's got 4 homers over his last 6 games. He's 44% rostered. He's got 7 games next week. So if you need an outfielder, I think Oscar Gonzalez is probably one of, if not the top hitter ads right now. So Again, that is for next week, and I have a sneaky feeling he'll be one of your sleeper hitters on tomorrow's podcast as well. Let's take a look at a few middle infielders here, Scott. Probably more so for, you know, 12-team roto leagues, maybe something even deeper than that. But Kyle Farmer went 2-for-4 with his 11th home run, and he's got 6 games next week, 2 tough matchups against Corbin Burnes and Brandon Woodruff. Elvis Andrus just continues to turn back the clocks. He went 2-for-4 with his 10th steal. He's 40% rostered. He's got 6 home games next week. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, specifically if you need speed, he went 1-for-3 with 2 steals. He's now up to 20 on the season. And over his last 19 games, he's hitting .299 with 2 homers and 5 steals, 8 strikeouts to 7 walks. That is IKF. He's 36% rostered, 6 home games next week as well. Last one, Rodolfo Castro, who we have not talked much about, and he's quietly doing some interesting things right now. He went 2-for-5 with a sock and a shoe, his 9th homer, his 5th steal. His last 32 games since rejoining the Pirates, he's hitting .263, 8 homers, 3 steals. He's only 5% rostered. He's got second, third, shortstop eligibility. He looks kind of interesting right now. Scott, what do you think about these 4? How would you rank them? Kyle Farmer, Elvis Andrus, IKF, Rodolfo Castro.
Well, mostly according to their matchups next week, because that's the stage of the season we're in. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at them right now. Obviously, tomorrow I'll be able to say with more confidence how the matchups look for each of these teams. But just at a glance here, it looks good for basically all of them. I mean, Kyle Farmer probably has the worst matchups facing Woodruff and Burnes, it looks like. But Elvis Andrus has a 3-game series against the Tigers. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa has the Pirates and the Red Sox.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah. I'm going to rank them Elvis Andrus first, then Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, then Kyle Farmer, then Rodolfo Castro, who don't have a ton of confidence in him. Definitely think he has more to prove still. While the others, they've shown they can give you a good week when they're rolling and the matchups are right. So yeah, again, that's Andrus, Kiner-Falefa, Farmer, and then Rodolfo Castro.
I do have one catcher on the list. Danny Jansen went 2-for-3 with 2 doubles and 2 runs scored. And in his last 15 games, he's hitting .386 with 3 home runs. He's 22% rostered, and he has 6 road games next week. And I don't know why this is, but his splits are much better on the road this season. Scott, another, you know, this is more of like a 2 catcher, obviously, in a second catcher in 2 catcher leagues. Would you rather have Danny Jansen or Eric Haas, who has popped up recently?
I'll take Haas.
But any interest in Danny Jansen, or are you just not really buying this?
I mean, he's fine as a second catcher, but you know, it's it's hard to get excited about a second catcher on any level. He's fine. He's another option you can use in that spot.
All right. I referenced this earlier, but what do we do with these 2 Rockies hitters in particular? Charlie Blackmon now in the second half is hitting .217 with 2 home runs and a .550 OPS. Yet he's still 95% rostered. Maybe it's the name, value, whatever it might be. The Rockies have 7 home games next week, which normally that's just, okay, auto, plug and play. But, you know, Charlie Blackmon has had home games in the second half. And as I just referenced, his second half has been quite bad. Same thing could be said for Brendan Rodgers, who over his last 30 games is hitting .222 with 1 home run and a .616 OPS. Yet he's still 86% rostered. Scott, is this just plug him in because it's 7 games in Colorado, or I don't know, do we shy away because they've just been so bad?
I think it's the former. I think you still start him at Colorado. That you don't have to start them, obviously, if you have studs at the positions they play, and you wouldn't have had much interest in them starting them except for me saying, yeah, you should go ahead and start them. If that's like your only rationale for doing it, then you know, I'm probably not talking to you. But if you're thinking about sitting them now because, oh, this guy's been killing me lately, I think the last full week at Coors Field is not the time to do that. I think you go ahead and run them out there one more time and hope it goes better this time.
The 2 most added outfielders on CBS, Jake McCarthy and Oscar Gonzalez. Would you drop Charlie Blackmon for either or both?
I'm going to say no, because I Well, I know McCarthy has horrible matchups next week.
Yeah.
And let me double check, because you already told everybody Gonzalez is going to be in my sleeper hitters for next week. Double check those matches. Kind of middle of the road there. Probably will be among my sleeper hitters, but not a guarantee. I could see if it's a categories league and you want home runs specifically, then I would drop Charlie Blackmon for Oscar Martinez. But otherwise, if it's a points league, if it's not home runs you're looking for, then I think stick with Blackmon.
That's Oscar Gonzalez, by the way, Scott. You said Oscar Martinez.
Hmm. Yeah. I was trying to remember the first name and then messed up the last name. Oscar Gonzalez. Yeah, Oscar Gonzalez. Right. You need home runs, Oscar Gonzalez. Otherwise, Charlie Blackmon.
In terms of the middle infielders, I mentioned Eduardo Escobar has second base eligibility. Let's take a look at shortstop. Elvis Andrus, someone we've talked about a lot. Let's say those two, Scott. Elvis Andrus, Eduardo Escobar, would you take either or both over Brendan Rodgers for next week?
No, I'd go with Rodgers.
All right, so we're sticking with him through thick and thin. Let's take a look at some waiver wire pitchers. And we've talked about Nick Lodolo a bunch recently. You're probably tired of it, but man, when you put up 11 strikeouts and back-to-back starts, you just got to keep talking about you. So he winds up with a quality start up against the Pirates. He goes 6 1/3, 3 runs allowed, 11 strikeouts, 16 swinging strikes. And over his last 6 starts, Nick Lodolo, 2.76 ERA, 49 strikeouts to just 6 walks over 39 2/3 innings pitched. He is 74% rostered and looks like he might have 2 starts next week up against the Red Sox and the Brewers. Ross Stripling has now turned in 6 straight quality starts, this one up against Tampa Bay, and he went 6 1/3. He gave up 1 run with 4 strikeouts. These are more shallow league plays at this point. 78% rostered. Looks like he also has 2 starts at Philly and at Tampa Bay. And then Kyle Gibson, he's 74% rostered. He got back on track. Solid start against the Marlins. I don't really think he's in this conversation. He's more of a streamer, if anything. And his matchups next week are the Blue Jays and the Braves. So don't really like that very much for Kyle Gibson. But I guess, Scott, let's just talk about Nick Lodolo and Ross Stripling. What you saw from them, I think obviously if they do have 2 starts, we're going to be excited to add and start both of them next week.
Well, yeah, I've been saying for a while now Nick Lodolo is the most attractive pitcher to pick up for down the stretch, looking at his matchups going forward. Obviously, well, did he come through in this Pirates start? He gave you a bunch of strikeouts. He ended up taking the loss, though, so that's unfortunate. But it clearly wasn't a bad start for your team. Just we would have preferred to see him get the win. Yeah, I mean, he's looked great. He looks like he's emerging as the kind of pitcher we hoped he could be. Of his 16 swinging strikes in this one, 13 came on the curveball, which he threw 40% of the time. Normally it's at 30% of the time. So he threw his best pitch more, which is normally a formula for success, and just seems to get better and better every time out. So Nick Lodolo, probably a fixture in your lineup down the stretch. Stripling, yeah, I'll take him if it's 2 start week. A little less confident in the ability, more concerned that it's smoke and mirrors, but if nothing else, like, he has great control, and now his whip is below 1 ERA. He's kept it below 3 for a while now, and you know, early in the season I was writing him off because he wasn't going deep into starts. That's clearly not a problem anymore. 6 straight quality starts for Ross Stripling, which of course means they were all 6 innings or more.
I remembered that exactly that you said, Scott, and I think Ross Stripling might have been listening because, as you mentioned, 6 straight quality starts. The guy's going
maybe
deep.
Is he? He's been on the podcast before.
That's true. He has been on the podcast. That, you know,
friend of the show.
I think I was working here for a month, and we had Ross Stripling on, and obviously I was nervous. I haven't done many podcasts with current athletes or anything like that. I think it went pretty well. You could go back and listen to it on demand, but no, he was a nice guy, and he's pitching really well right now. So I think more of a high floor play than Lodolo, probably more of like a ceiling guy, but Stripling has been awesome. So I absolutely trust him down the stretch here. A few other waiver wire pitchers, much more widely available. talk about getting it done down the stretch. Drew Smyly, another solid start at the Mets. Doesn't go too deep. Only five innings. One earned run allowed. Five strikeouts in this one. And now over his last eight starts, a 2.25 ERA. 41 strikeouts over 44 and a third. 13.8% swinging strike rate. And as I mentioned with the Cubs pitchers on yesterday's podcast, they have amazing matchups next week. CBS says Drew Smyly will face the Marlins and the Pirates. Even if he doesn't have a two-start week, he's facing one of those teams. And those are both amazing matchups. So, man, if you need a streamer, Drew Smyly is 34% rostered, and he is widely, widely available. The other one I wanted to mention kind of in this same conversation, Brian Baio. Solid, some rough defense behind him. The Red Sox, I mean, looking like the bad news bears out there. It was inside the park home run. It was like a little league home run that they allowed to Gleyber Torres, but he goes five innings, three unearned runs, six strikeouts for Brian Baio. And now over his last five starts since returning, 2.87 ERA, over a strikeout per inning, 50% ground ball rate, 14% swinging strike rate. That's exactly what you want to see from a young pitching prospect who is, you know, just kind of getting his feet wet. So he's been awesome.
Yeah.
And looks like he might be at the Reds and at the Yankees next week. So two starts for him as well. Scott, what do you think? Drew Smyly and Brian Baio.
Well, overall, Baio's ground ball rate is more like 60%. So
yep.
Between that and getting the whiffs up, that changeup looks like a standout pitch for him. Trending the right direction. I don't think I'm going to be ready to use him this year, because while he has looked better, you know, we're still talking about one start where he went six innings, another start during the stretch. I think he had four walks, so that it's still a little shaky. But you see the talent beginning to come to shine through for Brian Baio now, and that bodes well for next year. Yeah, I agree with Smyly. He looks like a great pickup for next week with those two matchups and 2.25 ERA in his last eight starts. Four of the eight starts, six innings or more. So it's not, it's enough volume to matter at least half the time.
Yeah. For example, if I have Kyle Gibson on my team and he's 74% rostered and he's the worst pitcher on my team, I would have no problem dropping him for Drew Smyly for next week.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they both have two starts, Gibson's matchups are a lot tougher. So,
yep, I agree.
So, yeah, Drew Smyly, 34% rostered. Last one I wanted to mention, I don't think there's anything here, but Kyle Freeland has allowed two earned runs or fewer in four straight. He was at the White Sox, where he went 6 2/3 shutout with five strikeouts. And you know, overall, the numbers are still pretty bad. He's 18% rostered and has the Giants and Padres next week, but both are in Coors Field.
Yeah, so you're not going to use them.
No.
It's as simple as that.
Fair enough. The drop meter, Scott, it's been a while. 1 through 10. 10, you could drop this player anywhere. 1, you're going to want to hold on to this player. Mike Clevinger was rocked once again. He gave up 6 runs over 5 innings pitched, 3 home runs allowed. And now over his last 8 starts, he has a 6.61 ERA, and he's still 81% rostered. Where is Mike Clevinger on the drop meter?
I am looking at his matchups, and it's not looking good. It looks like Cardinals and then a trip to Coors Field next week. So I'm not going to use him for those two starts.
Frankly, Scott, I don't know that it matters with how bad he's pitching right now.
Well, if he had two great matchups, I might think about it, at least in a points league.
Yeah.
But, you know, if we were in June, Mike Clevinger, I'd be like, all right, we'll just sit on him for a while, see if he can turn this around. But in September, I'm going to go to like 9 on the drop-o-meter.
Yeah, I'm dropping him for Stripling. I'm dropping him for Lodolo, obviously. Drew Smyly, I think I'm doing that one too.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, well, probably not for Baio, though.
No. No, I don't think Baio, I don't think you can trust Baio. And I'm not saying you can trust Clevinger, but who's more likely to do damage against you? Probably Clevinger.
All right. And the next one up here is David Peterson. He does not escape the first inning against the Chicago Cubs, who, by the way, they just swept the New York Mets. What is going on, Scott? I mean, obviously you're in a tight race here in the NL East, but
yeah, Braves and Mets are playing hot potato none of them wants to hold on to that division lead right now. I don't know what's going on.
I can tell you that here in New York, it is crazy right now. Like, Mets fans are absolutely freaking out about what's going on right now. And, oh, we do this every year. We blow the division, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, it has happened very often, unfortunately, for them.
It's kind of true. Doesn't mean it's going to happen this year.
Yeah.
I hope it happens, if I'm being completely honest. Oof. But both teams are obviously going to be in the postseason. The one that doesn't win the division, I guess, will be the second seed in the NL. So that would give them a bye, which is a big deal. But, you know, if you win the first round, then it's less of a big deal. So it's doesn't mean the sky is falling if you don't win the division, Mets fans or Braves fans.
Well, anywho, the reason I brought up the Mets was because David Peterson, again, did not escape the first inning. In fact, he recorded just one out. He gave up 5 runs on 3 walks and 2 hits. Yet he's still 52% rostered, Scott. Where is he on the drop-o-meter?
10. Why would you hold on to him at this point? He hasn't featured the slider since returning like he was earlier in the year and starting to look like an asset. And then Jacob DeGrom came in, bumped Peterson from the rotation, derailed all that progress he was making. And now since returning to the starting rotation, David Peterson has a 6.30 ERA in 5 starts. Only one of those 5 starts is what I'd call good. So yeah, no reason to bother with him anymore. At some point, Max Scherzer's coming back too, and Peterson will be out of a job again.
You know, Max Scherzer did make a rehab start here on Wednesday at AAA. I'll try and pull up his line, but in the meantime, we're going to take a quick break and we'll get to the news and notes here on Fantasy Baseball Today.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
The news and notes. Justin Verlander is in line to return on Friday against the Oakland A's. Scott, would you start him in daily lineup leagues?
I didn't catch the name, sorry.
Justin
Verlander. Yes, Verlander. I would. It might be a short start, but it's against the A's, so I would.
Yep. Max Scherzer did make a rehab start at AAA on Wednesday, and he went 3 2/3. He gave up 1 run with 7 strikeouts, so it sounds like he could be back as soon as next week. There was a rumor yesterday that he would be back on Monday, so if that's the case, we're looking at a 2-start week for good old Max Scherzer.
And David Peterson, you're out of there!
I actually have a perfect soundbite for that.
He gone.
Yordan Alvarez. Is he gone? Probably not. Hopefully not. He sat out Wednesday and said it was for maintenance purposes, not the recurring hand soreness. Not sure that I believe that, but hope you're all right. Trevor Story has missed 2 straight with left heel pain, but is likely to return Friday against the Royals. Rhys Hoskins exited Wednesday's game after getting hit by a pitch on his right hand. X-rays were negative, thankfully. Seiya Suzuki is also headed for X-rays after being hit by a pitch on his left hand slash wrist. Luis Arraez was pulled Wednesday due to left hamstring tightness. Tyler Mahle is unlikely to return this season. He's on the IL with shoulder fatigue. Jorge Polanco, who is on the IL with a knee injury, could be activated at some point later this week. Hunter Green will officially return on Saturday against the Cardinals and is 63% rostered. Scott, would you look to pick Hunter Green back up? He has the Brewers next week.
I wouldn't mind picking him up, but I would not be looking to use him in that start.
Okay, so I presume he's obviously behind Lodolo. probably behind Drew Smiley as well.
Yes, he's behind both of them. In turn, I'd like to pull up his matchups and see what he has remaining, if there's a realistic chance we would start him at some point. I'll do that real quick while you move on.
All right. Tyler Glasnow will require multiple additional rehab appearances before returning from the IL. Eric Lauer threw off flat ground on Wednesday, and manager Craig Counsell said the session was, quote, very positive. Lauer is on the IL with elbow inflammation. Aroldis Chapman is set to rejoin the Yankees on Friday. I don't think that will matter in the back end of the bullpen. Clay Holmes has basically regained that closer role for the Yankees. Sean Manaea will re-enter the rotation and start Thursday against the D-backs. No, you should not play him in any leagues or any daily lineup leagues, obviously. Aaron Civale will make a rehab appearance at AAA on Thursday. Could be back as soon as next week. And we do have a prospect call-up. Dre Jameson, a pitching prospect with the Diamondbacks, will make his debut Thursday against the Padres, which comes at an interesting time, Scott, because the minor league numbers for Dre Jameson this season, 6.31 ERA, 1.49 whip, and nearly a strikeout per inning, 132 strikeouts over 132 and two-thirds innings pitched. I assume this is just kind of a wait and let's see what happens with Dre Jameson.
Yeah, I mean, he's a prospect of some stature. Sorry, I was looking ahead to the angry email. He's a prospect of some stature, and we've seen Ryan Nelson, who also had bad numbers at AAA for the Diamondbacks, come up and immediately dominate both the Padres and the Dodgers. So maybe Jameson will surprise us too, and it's just, you know, the upper levels of the Diamondbacks system are really awful places to pitch. But I would bet against it right now. And with the bad matchups coming up for the Diamondbacks overall, unlikely I'm going to be willing to use Jameson at any point to close out the season.
All right, Scott. I don't ask you this often.
Okay, well, wait. Before we do that, I do want to mention Hunter Green.
Okay.
For that extra long final week of the season, he lines up to go against the Pirates and the Cubs. So
okay,
maybe worth stashing him for that. If he pitches horribly before then, you know, probably won't be, but you never know.
All right, Scotty, close down the rundown. You can't look at it. I don't want you to know what's coming here, all right?
Okay.
We've got an angry email from Jason. I have legit beef with Scotty Dubs. It's all in fun, but still. I'd like to start with this email with a player comparison. See if Scott can answer these. Player A, 267 batting average, 22 homers, 62 RBI, and 3 steals. That is player A. Player B is batting 242 with 24 homers, 52 RBI, and 6 steals. Obviously, I'm not going to expect you to get these, Scott, but they are both outfielders. I guess that's your only clue.
Well, I mean, by the numbers you listed, the first outfielder has had, let's see, is it mainly 20 points difference in batting average, 3 stolen bases difference? So I guess,
yeah, and 10 RBI.
Who has more?
Player A has more.
Okay, so player A's had a little bit better of a season than player B, according to those numbers. Am I supposed to try and guess who they are?
On those numbers? Yeah, it's completely unrealistic for you to guess them, so I'll just give you the answer. Player A is Jacques Peterson, and player B is Juan Soto. Now, Jason,
how many runs difference?
That must be pretty massive, but I could pull that up for you.
I imagine it'd be a ton more for Soto, but that's interesting that Peterson has more RBI despite the playing time difference between the two.
Jacques Peterson has 50 runs scored, and Juan Soto, he must have a bunch more. That's probably why he didn't include it, because that wouldn't go along with the argument. Yeah, Juan Soto
destroys the narrative.
Juan Soto has 84 runs scored, so you know, just a mere 34 run difference. Every season, I listen to Scott trash players who are outperforming expectations. Then just the other day, Juan Soto gets brought up. This was, I think, Thursday or Friday's podcast last week. Frank calls him a bust, and Scott has the audacity to sit there and point out that Well, he's the number three outfielder in points leagues. Well, that's great. I don't care. I play in roto leagues, and he's been terrible relative to expectations. So I have to listen to Scott trash players like Peterson, for example, who are doing well, only to have him defend Juan Soto. Find me a bigger first-round bust than Soto, excluding injuries, in the last 3 to 4 seasons.
Mm. Well, if you're going to exclude injuries.
Take that, Scott.
Well, I mean, look, half of our audience roughly plays in points leagues. So I think it's fair to point out that he's been the third best. I don't know that that's still true. But I do think it's fair to point out. Is trashing players who are doing well something I'm known for? Is this part of my MO? I didn't know that was a thing.
I do think that at times you are slower to come around on players, which I'm sure you have.
Me?
Your
compared
reasons.
To like Chris? You kidding me?
Well, yeah, I mean, Chris is a whole different story. Yeah. We could talk to Chris about that when he returns, I don't know, sometime in January or February. But
no, let's trash him when he's not here. No, I'm just
But yeah, I mean, I think it could take you some time to come around on players. And I mean, specifically for Jock Peterson, you know, he's just been around for so long. I will point out, like, the StatCast data looked really, really promising early on in the season. And for the most part, he did fade. I think the bigger...
Yeah, he disappeared during the middle of the season. He was hot early. He's been hot more recently. But there was a long stretch where he just wasn't worth playing.
The bigger point, I think, is if you play in a roto or categories league, if you just left Jock Peterson in your lineup all season, that's a pretty good stat line that he's provided you all year. Like, he's a top 120 player in Roto this year. And that was my takeaway, is when I looked into where these guys rank, Soto is the 81st overall player, Jock Peterson 114th. You know, if you just left Jock in your lineup all year, he's been really productive. Yeah, I think his ADP
was outside
the top 250 or something like that.
And looking at the monthly breakdown, July was a horrible month for him. He had 133, no home runs. Mm-hmm. May, the batting average was low, but he still hit 6 home runs. Like, obviously, if you're talking about a head-to-head scenario, he's out of the lineup so much that it makes him harder to use. But if you're talking about a 5-outfielder roto league, yeah, I mean, he would have been fine just planting him there.
Yeah. So, that's my biggest takeaway, right? Like, Jock Peterson is the perfect example of someone who is better in a roto format where, okay, just give me whatever his numbers are at the end of the season, but it's going to be rough getting there. And in a head-to-head league, you don't want that. You want someone that's more consistent throughout, you know, on a week-to-week basis, obviously.
Well, I mean, also, Jock Peterson's batting average is a career high this year by 20 points. So that's, we can't leave that out, is that he's done something he's never done before.
Yeah. Hey, it's the Giants devil magic. But just to put a bow on this email, I guess, Juan Soto has been a huge disappointment in Roto this year. There's no doubt about it. I don't know what that will mean for his draft stock next year. He's still a first-round player, I believe, in head-to-head points leagues. You know, mm-hmm. Is he more of like a first, second-round turn, or does he drop to the second round in a categories league? I find it hard to believe, but I don't know. I think there's going to be people like, what was his name? Jason, who probably will shy away from Juan Soto next year.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where it goes. I think he'll still be a first rounder in all formats. It might be a late first rounder in Roto, but I mean, this is coming into the season. This is the guy I think most people would have said is the best hitter in baseball. Certainly among the best in history, age 19 through 22. And I mean, anybody who walks 40 times more than they strike out, it's just hard to fail when you have that good of an eye and are capable of putting the ball over fence on any level. Mm-hmm. So I expect a big bounce back for Juan Soto next year, to the extent that he did disappoint this year.
All right, let's get into some fill in the blank here, Scott. And these are going to be more so geared toward next season. And I think it's a good idea and it's a fun idea to incorporate some of those things, because some people who might still be listening maybe they're out of their head-to-head playoffs or they're not really competing in their roto leagues. You know, we want a reason for you all to stick around. So we'll have a little fun with some things here down the stretch. And first up, we have Julio Rodriguez, who had another fantastic game here on Wednesday. He went 2-for-3 with a sock and a shoe, his 26th home run, his 25th steal. So now officially a 25-25 season for him. But that is Julio's just his fourth steal since July 7th. That is a 43-game stretch. So that is a 13-steal pace over 150 games. So, Scott, your fill-in-the-blank is, I would reasonably project blank steals for Julio Rodriguez next season.
Oh, I don't think I can reasonably project anybody's steals next season because of the rule changes. I think the landscape, the stolen base landscape is going to change completely, as I've talked about recently here, and in ways that are going to be very hard to predict. So if we just ignore that aspect of it, you know, the fact that he had 19 steals in the first 3 months versus 6 here in the last 3 months would suggest to me that he's going to be running less moving forward, as often happens with middle of the order bats. So, if we're excluding the effect of the rule changes and however that might change the league landscape, I would comfortably predict 15 steals for Julio Rodriguez next year, but it may end up being 30 because things change that much as far as helping base runners.
And I think that's within his range of outcomes. We probably don't talk about this as much as we should, but Julio will have a very big range of outcomes. Just being the young player that he is, it's kind of hard to project guys like that. He's a freak physically in terms of power. It wouldn't surprise me if he hit 40 plus home runs and stole 20 to 30 bases. But I think, Scott, you're in the right ballpark. I think 15 to 20.
Does he grow into being a 40-40 guy? Is he?
It's possible.
Alex Rodriguez, you know? I mean, that doesn't seem outside the realm of possibility, looking what he's already capable of doing.
He's so young.
At his age, yeah.
He is 21 years old. Look, he's a 25-25 player at 21 years old. So I'm asking you to do the near impossible, Scott. But if just heading into next season, if you draft Julio in a categories league, I think you just kind of safely project 15 to 20 steals. And anything more that you get than that, that's just gravy at that point. Let's talk about his teammate, Luis Castillo.
If things play out with the new rules like I think they're going to play out, he will have more than 15. But relative to the league, I mean, we're going to see increases all over the place. So it's going to be a major headache for next year, as if we haven't had enough of those the past few years.
Luis Castillo turned in a very strong start once again up against the Padres. 6 shutout with 9 strikeouts. He had 16 swinging strikes on 99 pitches. And in 8 starts with the Mariners, a 2.38 ERA. 60 strikeouts over 49 and a third innings pitched. Scott, Luis Castillo will be a top blank starting pitcher drafted next season.
Ooh, without lining up all the names, I have him in my top 10, I think, rest of season. But obviously there are going to be some others who I rank lower who will move ahead of him because of health and workload expectations being improved for them. I think Luis Castillo, I feel pretty good about him being drafted as, I'm only going to say top 20. It could be top 15, but I'm going to say, just to play it conservatively, top 20.
I think that's a good range as well. I thought I have him 15th right now, but for the reasons you mentioned, yeah, I think 15 to 20. Once again, same thing as Julio Rodriguez, 15 to 20. Sounds right for Luis Castillo. JT Realmuto went 2-for-4 with a double dong revenge game against the Marlins. Now up to 18 home runs total, and it has been a tale of two seasons. First 3 months, JT Realmuto hit .239 with a .677 OPS. From July on, he has hit .323, 13 of his 18 home runs, 7 steals, and an OPS that is now pushing 1,000 during that time. So, JT Realmuto is a top blank catcher drafted next season.
Let's say top 3 catcher drafted next season, just because of the track record and, of course, the way he's come around this year. And because I'm not sure who the buzzy player is going to be a catcher next year. Like, Adley Rutschman would make sense. I guess Alejandro Kirk might make sense too. I was wondering who the data darling is at the position. It might be Kirk, but I thought, yeah, I'm going to say top three for Real Muto. I don't know who exactly the other two are going to be. It could be any of probably like six players. It's catcher's going to be a different world at catcher next season, because there are a lot of new options who have already emerged there. And I think it's going to keep getting deeper. Looking at some of the talent still to come.
Carlos Rodon turned in a solid start up against the Braves. He went 5 innings, 1 unearned run with 8 strikeouts. However, velocity down once again. I mean, it's a roller coaster with Rodon's velocity this year, up and down, up and down. He still finds ways to be productive, so can't really complain. But the fastball was down nearly 2 miles per hour. The slider down 1.5 miles per hour. But still a great season. 2.84 ERA, 220 strikeouts. Just ridiculous stuff. Scott, Carlos Rodon will be drafted in round blank next season.
Oh, you want a round?
Yeah.
Obviously a big difference between points and categories.
Or you could give me a round range if that's easier.
Well, in points leagues, let's start with that. Carlos Rodon, I'll say round 3. In categories leagues, I will say round... is he going to be back with the Giants next year? Yeah, 2-year deal.
I think he has an opt-out, though.
Oh.
He had to get to a certain innings limit or innings minimum.
Yeah, he met the innings minimum.
Yeah.
So, yeah, chance he opts out.
Yeah, he's going to do that.
I'll say I'm between round 5 and 6.
In categories? I'll say,
yeah. You know, you think that's too high?
No.
You think that's too low?
Too low, yeah. I think he's probably just a round 3 pick regardless.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, he's...
Where do you see him being among starting pitchers next year?
I have him ranked as my, I think, 6th or 7th pitcher right now. So I have him ranked ahead of Luis Castillo.
Yeah, he'll be ahead of Luis Castillo, but will he be ahead of Verlander? He's not going to be ahead of McClanahan or Burns or Cole or DeGrom if DeGrom is healthy.
Correct.
Or Alcantara. I mean, how many pitchers are you going to draft? And like, I'm going hitter crazy early in roto leagues.
No, I'm not saying like where you will take them. But
I don't think we're going to get deep enough into starting pitchers through 3 rounds for Carlos Rodon to go that early. That's my read on it.
Wheeler's
probably going earlier. Woodruff.
Let's say he's like the 12th pitcher drafted. That's probably round 3 or 4, I would say.
I'm not sure Zach Wheeler would go earlier, come to think of it.
I think so.
You think so?
Yeah.
I'm gonna stick with round 5.
Okay. So round 3 in points, round 5 in categories.
Yep.
That is Carlos Rodon, who I am seeing a little injury sign next to on CBS. So.
Oh.
Let me.
Breaking news.
I'll pull that up and see what's going on with him. The last one that I have here is Corbin Carroll, who hit his 3rd home run. And it was 107 miles per hour off the bat. He is 100th percentile in sprint speed, according to StatCast, yet he does not have a stolen base yet. I think those are going to come in bunches for years to come. He's 70% rostered. We mentioned we don't really like the Diamondbacks matchups for next week, but this is more about next season. Corbin Carroll will likely be drafted between rounds blank and blank. So I'm giving you some leeway here, Scott, a little bit of a range next season. Corbin Carroll.
Between rounds blank and blank. If he doesn't get any stolen bases, that might suppress the cost. Now again, I think he's going to be a big base stealer, especially with the changes happening rule wise next year. But let's say between 8 and 12, that's where Corbin Carroll will go.
I was thinking between 6 and 8, but that might just be in a categories league more than anything. I think he'll be fine for a points league as well, but
I would not draft him that early. I feel pretty confident saying that. It does seem like he's the sort of player who could build up enough buzz to go that early, especially if people are thinking, "Oh, we got a big time base stealer here." Mm-hmm. Despite what's happened along those lines so far.
Carlos Rodon, by the way, left his start with a blister on Wednesday. So perhaps that contributed to the velocity being down. Yeah, hopefully he's good enough to make his next start. Or hopefully he's not, because it's in Colorado. I don't really like that, but obviously.
I think he's of the caliber you still want him starting at Colorado.
Yeah, that's true. All right, so some fill in the blank there, and let's wrap up with some leftovers here from Wednesday's action. Let's check in on Edward Cabrera. It's been a while since we've talked about him. A solid start against the Phillies. He went 5 1/3. He gave up 2 runs. He had 4 strikeouts with 14 swinging strikes on 98 pitches, 2.70 ERA, 1.08 whip. However, the underlying number is not nearly as good. 4.60 FIP, 4.23 XFIP for Edward Cabrera. What have you seen, Scott, so far from Cabrera? And I kind of think he's going to be in that mix with Lodolo as the young, breakout, trendy, hype starting pitchers for next season.
I think Lodolo is going to go earlier, unless Cabrera's just awesome in his last 3 starts or 4, however many he has left, because there have been some good indicators, and I know there have been times where I've talked him up more than others, but just not efficient enough is what it comes down to. Makes him hard to use, and we don't expect the Marlins to be a great supporting to provide him with a great support next year either, so that'll be a knock against him. And just, is he going to be able to go 6 innings consistently enough? Good ground ball skills, good bat missing skills. But yeah, this is now in his past 4 starts, he has 11 walks in 21 2/3 innings. It's hard to succeed that way.
Yeah, that's the biggest drawback right now. It's 4.5 walks per 9. You might ask, why are the underlying numbers so much higher than the actual ERA? He has a 199 BABIP. That's not sustainable. He has an 89% strand rate. League average is 75-ish%, something like that. So, yeah, he's been kind of lucky in that regard. He does do a really good job limiting hard contact and obviously getting whiffs. I think he's going to grow as a pitcher. Sandy Alcantara, like, I watch Marlins games too much. Don't tell anyone that, but
I can't watch Marlins games.
they talk about how Sandy has taken Cabrera under his wing and that he's, you know, a student of the game and he's like trying to learn as much as he can from Sandy. I see a big jump coming. I think I'm probably just going to be higher than everyone else on Edward Cabrera, but I do like him quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously upside there and he could take a huge leap. But you know, you could say that about a bunch of pitchers.
Sure. Yep. Some pitching standouts. Part one, Christian Javier turns in his first quality start since August 20th. He was at the Tigers. He went 6 shutout with 8 strikeouts in this one. And I did see a sequence where he was pitching to Javier Baez, which was the worst plate appearance I may have ever seen in my life, Scott. Christian Javier threw 4 sliders in a row that were 6 inches to a foot off the plate. Javier Baez swung at each one of them. And he didn't think twice about it. He just did it each and every time. It was prime Javier Baez stuff. Nestor Cortez had a solid outing at the Red Sox. He went 5 innings, 1 run, 7 strikeouts. Sonny Gray, probably haven't given him enough credit as he deserves, tied a season high with 7 innings pitched up against the Royals. He went 7 shutout with 8 strikeouts in that one. His ERA is down to 2.91. And then Corbin Burnes struggled early on in the start, but did settle down. He went 7 innings, 3 runs allowed with 5 strikeouts at the Cardinals. Anything you'd like to add on Burnes, Sonny Gray, Nestor Cortez, and Christian Javier?
Yeah. It's funny that you say that about Baez, because he actually had a pretty good game otherwise.
Homered.
He's had a solid month here, not enough to redeem his season, obviously. By the way, Eugenio Suarez, we didn't mention him, 6 home runs in his past 6 games. And remember, he had a huge September last year too, 355 with 7 home runs. He's doing it again. So that I find interesting. Obviously, we've talked about him having a bounce back season and becoming a useful fantasy option again. So in the second half, Sonny Gray, I was looking up this note, I was stalling there to find it. Second half, Sonny Gray now has a 198 ERA, 104 whip, 9.7 K per 9. And probably means he's going to be overdrafted next year, because that's always how this goes with him. But looking pretty trustworthy right now. I'm not sure the matchups even matter that much. He's not exactly must start, but it would be hard to sit him. Let me see if I can pull up his matchups real quick. So next week, maybe a two-star pitcher, White Sox and Tigers. Got to like that.
Love it.
I mean, that's all. You know what? That's all that. Ah, crap. I jumped ahead a week again.
Yeah, okay. So it's the Angels and Guardians next week.
Okay. Yeah, still pretty good.
Yep.
But then the final week, that long week, it's White Sox and Tigers are all that the Twins face. So you got to like that for Sonny Gray.
I don't think that he's going to be overdrafted, Sky. I think he's still going to fly under the radar. I think enough people have kind of been burned by Sonny Gray. I could be wrong about that, but
no, we'll you're probably right. I was kind of just making a joke.
Some hitting leftovers. Don't worry, Scott. I was getting there to Eugenio Suarez. He went 1-for-4 with his 31st home run, 11th most in Major League Baseball. So nice, impressive bounce back season for him. Jose Ramirez went 2-for-4 with his 27th home run. He has just one steal since July 27th, which I thought was pretty interesting. That is a 45-game stretch where Jose Ramirez has a sub-800 OPS. So going to have to dive in. I know he was dealing with an injury. I think it was like back in June or July that caused him to slow down. But
so who's going to be the first player drafted next year? It's not going to be Tatis. It's not going to be Acuna.
You.
I thought it was going to be Jose Ramirez, but he's been kind of shaky here. I still think it's probably going to be him. It's not going to be Juan Soto. We've already covered that. Aaron Judge. I that feels risky. Aaron Judge won overall to me, but
in Roto, it will be Trey Turner still, I think.
Okay. Yeah. I guess,
I think Mookie Betts is in that conversation again now.
I mean, I'd rather have Jose Ramirez than Trey Turner, especially since Turner will be back to being just a shortstop, but yeah, I guess Trey Turner's in that discussion.
Is Kyle Tucker in that discussion? He went 2-for-4 with his 27th home run. And in 36 games since the start of August, he is hitting .302 with 8 homers and 6 steals. I think he's probably not in the first overall pick discussion, but he will be a mid to late first round pick. That is Kyle Tucker. Bryce Harper went 1-for-3 with his 17th home run. It's just his second homer in 16 games since returning from the IL. And as we mentioned, Dalton Varsho, 2 more hits, including his 25th home run. He now has 7 homers. Homers over his last 11 games.
Wait, can I rewind to something, what you said about Tucker, mid to late first round pick? So yep. are you saying then you would take Kyle Tucker over Juan Soto next year?
In categories, for sure.
For sure.
For sure, yes.
I don't think I would.
I mean, maybe I'm just overvaluing steals still, Scott, but
I mean, Kyle Tucker's disappointed with the batting average too. And
Not the way that, like, Soto has, though.
Again, I think you're underestimating how the steals landscape is going to change. Juan Soto has shown a willingness to run successfully in the past.
But not nearly as much as, I mean, Tucker has over 20 steals this year.
Right, but if there's a democratization of stolen bases like we saw with home runs, I think Soto will be taking advantage of those opportunities at least nearly as. Maybe that's a little too strong to say I think this will happen, but I think he could take advantage of those opportunities just as often as Tucker will.
Maybe I'm just paying too much attention to this season, but Kyle Tucker is a top 20 player in Roto this year.
Well, yeah, but you're saying mid to late first round pick.
Yeah, I mean, Juan Soto is...
I'm not denying he's a second round pick.
I think he's there. I personally think Tucker's there.
Okay. I could see him being drafted in the first round. I'm not saying that definitely won't happen, but I would rather have Soto.
Calls to the bullpen for the Astros. Ryan Pressly struck out 2 for his 28th save. For the Rockies, Daniel Bard struck out the side legitimately this time. He didn't give up any base runners for his 30th save. For the Giants, Camilo Duvall struck out the side as well for his 23rd. For the Yankees, Clay Holmes gave up a run, but did pick up his 20th save. For the Cubs, Brandon Hughes was unavailable. Mark Leiter Jr. picked up his second save. Rowan Wick pitched in the 7th. I told you they're just kind of done with Rowan Wick in high leverage situations. For the Cardinals, Ryan Helsley struck out 2 for his 17th. For the Rangers, Jose Leclerc entered in a one-run game, and he gave up two runs. Only one of them was earned, but he did wind up with the blown save and loss. On the other side for Oakland, they had a one-run lead. Left-handed pitcher Sam Moll, that's M-O-L-L, recorded the first two outs, and then Domingo Acevedo recorded the final out for, I don't know what number save this is for him, but I'm sure it's not many. It is his first save of the season. Streamers, Thursday, JT Brubaker at the Mets, Daniel Lynch at the Twins, Dylan Bundy versus the Royals, and Dre Jameson in his debut versus the Padres.
I am going to take none of those guys.
I agree.
We discussed yesterday, Thursday, not looking good for streamers.
I agree. Friday, we have Herman Marquez at the Cubs, Marcus Stroman versus the Rockies, Matt Manning versus the White Sox, and Mitch Keller at the Mets.
I'm okay with Herman Marquez at the Cubs. I'm okay on the other end, Marcus Stroman against the Rockies. Not saying either are musts, but they're probably the best you could do in the next 2 days. By the way, Craig Kimbrell, another disaster here today, here on Wednesday.
Yeah, it looks like that happened in extra innings. Came on for the save. He gave up three runs, two of those earned. His fifth blown save, sixth loss. ERA now over four for Craig Kimbrell.
I don't think Dave Roberts is going to treat him like a closer in the playoffs.
No,
like that could be. He's stuck with him all year because it hasn't mattered, and I think he's trying to like get him right for the playoffs, but I don't know that it's going to happen.
All right, we're going to wrap there. For Scott, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
The hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What if it was your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount+.